Okay, good afternoon and welcome to session number 233. How effectively does the Bloggernacle represent Mormonism? If any of you have cell phones or any other pagers or noise-making devices, please put those on vibrate or turn them off. I'm going to begin with a little introduction here, then I'll introduce the panelists. I stumbled upon the Bloggernacle a few years ago at a critical time in my life when I was questioning not only my faith in Mormonism, but my faith in general. I knew intuitively that my questions would not be welcomed in Elders' Quorum in Sunday School, and that they would likely only alarm and distress my family and Mormon friends. Finding email groups like Mormon Library, Mormon L, and Two Mormon L was like literally being thrown a lifeline. Here was a place that where I could hash out my issues and questions in semi-real time with people who were either in my same predicament or who had been there and done that. Not long after I discovered the Bloggernacle, the term used to describe the loose consortium of Mormon-related group or personal blogs that littered the internet landscape. I fondly remember discovering those first bloggers or commenters whose point of view resonated most strongly with me. Some of them I have since met in person, others remain faceless, their identities an amalgam of pixels and ideas. Some of them are sitting on this panel. But so valuable were their insights that I'd either print out or cut and paste various sentences, paragraphs, whole posts, and even long back-and-forth exchanges. I did this ostensibly for reference purposes, but I realize now that it was more personal than that, more like keeping a journal or trying to own important ideas, not unlike the way I used to write out song lyrics in notebooks or cut out magazine articles as a teenager. For the first 12 to 18 months, I was something of an addict, needing to be aware of and weigh in on every conversation happening in even the most remote corners of the sprawling Bloggernacle. Today, the Bloggernacle is more like an old friend. I ring up on the phone from time to time, much to the relief of my wife and employer. Much has been said and written about the Bloggernacle, mostly by the Bloggernacle itself, but also by such... mainstream and reputable sources as the Salt Lake Tribune and the New York Times. We're also pleased to have KCPW Radio here today doing a story on us. So in some ways, the Bloggernacle has become one of the more visible faces of Mormonism. We're here today to discuss the following questions. One, just how accurately does the Bloggernacle represent Mormons and Mormonism? Two, are there demographic or ideological biases in the Bloggernacle? Three, are certain groups excluded, women or gays or even conservatives? Four, can the Bloggernacle really represent mainstream Mormonism while also providing an accurate window into the many different demographic and ideological subgroups within the Mormon community? And should it even try to? So we've got an esteemed group of people here. My name is Matt Thurston. I'm a member of the Sunstone Board of Directors. I also write for Sunstone Blog. My professional background, I got my undergraduate degree in accounting from BYU. An MBA from UC Irvine. I'm a CPA. I'm currently the Executive Director of National Accounts for Import Stone. At church, I have an amazing three callings. I'm a Sunday school teacher to 17-year-olds. I teach in the Elders' Quorum, and I'm also the ward's employment specialist. I'm from Corona, California, where I live with my wife, Amy, and my three children. We're going to go in the order that you see in your program. First, we'll have Kami Wanger. Here we go. Kami David Wanger is assistant professor of, let's see, Kami was born in, sorry, Godric's Hollow. His parents were slain while he was an infant in an unfortunate incident which left only a lightning-shaped scar on his forehead. Sorry, wrong one. Yeah, he's an assistant professor of law at Thomas Jefferson Law School. Of law in San Diego. His scholarly writings deals mainly with civil rights issues, especially reparations for slavery. He is a graduate of Columbia University School of Law. Previously, he worked as a law clerk to Senior District Judge Jack B. Weinstein in the Eastern District of New York, and as a litigation associate at Cravath, Swain, and Moore in New York City. Cravath. Kami lives in San Diego with his wife, Mardell, and their three children. I see they're here today. He attends San Diego 12th Ward, where he's the Elders' Quorum instructor and ward organist. Kami is a founding member of the group blog Times and Seasons, where he does most of the LDS-related blogging. He was also a founding member of the group blog By Common Consent. Really? okay, where he blogged for a few months before coming to his senses, he says. He has guest posted on various other blog and echo blogs, including Feminist Mormon Housewives. I also tap Kimi as the person most likely to write the eventual rise and fall of blog and echo 10 years from now. So whenever that book comes out. Next, we've got Christine Haglund. Christine accidentally stumbled over the Metaphysical Elders blog while she was looking for the address of the chapel in Cambridge, Massachusetts. A cyber accident which has had unexpectedly far-reaching repercussions. She followed the link to Times and Seasons, made several long-winded comments, and was soon asked to join the TNS team. She also joined by common consent when it was organized, and continues blogging despite occasional half-hearted vows to start cleaning her house instead. In her pre-blogging existence, she earned a BA in German Studies and an MA in German Literature. She lives with her three magnificent children in Boston's North Shore and directs the Cambridge State Choir. Also, she makes wicked peanut butter brownies. Next, we have Russell Arben Fox. I made one up for you. Russell cross-dresses in his... Just kidding. In his spare time while blogging. So, yeah. Russell Arben Fox is an assistant professor and the director of the political science program at Friends University in Wichita, Kansas. His interests include political ideologies, American political thought, the history of political philosophy, religion, politics, and contemporary political theory. He has been involved in the blog and echo through the Times and Seasons blog since late 2003. I also copied a few things off his Times and Seasons bio, which I thought were interesting. He said, "I believe in belonging, and mostly define myself by my attachments, of which I have been blessed with many. I'm a husband and a father, a brother and a son, a Christian and a Mormon, a teacher and a scholar, and a colleague, a citizen, a ward member, and surprisingly enough, to a great number of amazingly patient people, a friend. I also ramble on at great length, but you know that by now." Lastly, but not least, let's see. We've got Lisa Butterworth. Lisa is the AKA FMH. Lisa is the founder of the Juggernaut Feminist Mormon Housewives. It's one of the more provocative blogs in the Blogger Knackle. Just 2 days ago, I posted a comment to a blog post called "The Naughty Nipple." This had something to do with sex toy shops. If you want to know what it has to do with Mormonism, I guess you'll have to go to the website to find out. Between blogging, she wipes bums, referees flights, and cooks potatoes for her family in Boise, Idaho. So we'll go in that order, first with Kimi.
Thank you, Matt. It's good to see everybody. I see a lot of familiar blogging faces out in the audience. And this is a fun panel. This is an idea that John Dillon bounced off of me a few weeks ago, actually, and said, should we talk about the fact that blogs are being talked about so much? Are they really representative of Mormonism? And it sounded like a good idea, so this panel came together somewhat quickly. And it's true, blogs are becoming increasingly popular, maybe because of posts about nipples and sex toys, or at least partly because of posts about nipples and sex toys, but in large part as well because people see ideas and substance and discussion, and despite the jokes that we make about nipple posts at Lisa's blog, there's a lot of substance and a lot of discussion and a lot of sort of therapeutic discussion, for lack of a better word, as people discuss questions they have, issues that they're dealing with, and so on. And so we get this community forum in blogs, and they are becoming increasingly popular. Readership is up in blogs. The larger LDS blogs get 2,000 or 3,000 hits per day, people visiting. And when you think about how many people that is over the course of time, it gets pretty large. Even more so than that, though, blogs are disproportionately visible because they're widely accessible, they're on the internet, and so it's easy to see, well, if somebody wants to find out what Mormons are thinking about the war in Iraq, or somebody wants to find out what Mormons are thinking about some particular issue, you can just pop online, look in Google, and you've got all sorts of blog discussions about whatever these issues are. And as a result, bloggers, including myself, are being increasingly quoted or cited in news stories. And so we're seeing John DeLynn in the room, I think, yep. John quoted in the New York Times, Lisa interviewed for Bust Magazine and for, what was that internet radio show that you were on?
Radio Rita's
radio show. I occasionally get calls from Peggy Fletcher Stack or other people, usually when they can't get a hold of John DeLynn or Lisa or somebody more reliable. So there's an increasing visibility of blogs in mainstream media. And this raises all sorts of questions. And, of course, this isn't just a Mormon phenomenon. So you look in the New York Times, you see other bloggers being quoted. You see Design Mom being quoted. You see other popular bloggers. To some extent, there's overlap because people like Andrew Sullivan are both mainstream media writers and bloggers. But to a large degree, regular reporters or news writers are quoting bloggers. And this raises all sorts of interesting questions. Some of this is going to be normal reliance on experts. So maybe somebody looks on Times and Seasons looking to find somebody who's an expert on philosophy, notes that Jim Faulkner is on there and he's a philosophy professor, and gives Jim a call. And that's not really all that unusual. I mean, journalists rely on experts all the time. I get calls sometimes from journalists in my capacity as a law professor, and they want a discussion of a particular statute or of a particular proposed legislation or case, and that's normal. So there's not that much unusual going on if somebody noting that Jim is a philosophy professor decides to give him a call to discuss a philosophy issue. But the majority of bloggers are not really experts on their subjects. Shh, don't tell anyone. And the majority of what we blog about is things that we're not really experts on. So, yes, I'm a law professor. I could be considered at least somewhat of an expert on some legal issues, but most of my blogging is on other issues, Mormon life, other sorts of things that I can't really be considered a credentialed expert on. And so this raises fun questions. Why on earth would a journalist want to talk to me about Mormon issues? Why would Peggy give me a call and say, what do you think about these particular questions from a Mormon perspective? And there we get into the fact that journalists often rely on sort of every man. I know it's a sexist term, but unfortunately every woman just hasn't caught on as well. But journalists rely on a sort of every man perspective and often try to get the idea of, you know, what is the grassroots thinking? What are people thinking on the non-experts? Let's tap into the vein of just what's going on in public discourse at large. So this raises the fun question, are bloggers really every man or every woman? And because if so, it's great. This is nice, easy access, searchable access, Googleable access to what every man is thinking. So if we want to find out what every man thinks of war issues, if we want to find out what every man thinks of environmental issues, we can just get onto blogs, type in environment on By Common Consent or Times and Seasons, and wow, there's a post. That's a great every man viewpoint, and we can start talking about this in mainstream media. But is that really accurate? And of course, to start off with, the whole everyman approach is never entirely accurate, I think, even on the larger perspective. So even if journalists are going out and grabbing people off the street and saying, what do you think about this issue? What do you think about that issue? There's always going to be some level of disconnect because really you can't find out what everybody thinks unless you interview 200 million people in the United States. And that's probably beyond the capacity of most people, even John DeLynn. There's always going to be a little bit of a disconnect between these everyman quotes and the actual, if there is an actual sort of public opinion on an issue. And, of course, you have to pick and choose someone to represent the everyman. So use of bloggers will represent the natural sort of disconnect or imperfections in the process. But is there more? Are there systemic biases? Are there systemic ways in which blogs are skewed in one direction or another? And what does that mean if journalists are relying on blogs to represent the face of Mormonism? And I think in any given story, you have maybe two or three everyman quotes. There may be no more or less bias than grabbing random people off the streets, but over the course of time, over the long run, if there's a systemic bias, then perhaps an inaccurate picture of Mormonism might emerge. If blogs are being painted as the face of Mormonism, perhaps we're not seeing the whole thing. Which brings us to the question. So what exactly is the Bloggernacle, besides being a terribly hard to pronounce and not really, well, terribly unwieldy neologism? It is it's the sort of community that has sprung up in LDS blogs. So some of the blogs that are represented by people on this panel and a number of other blogs, and our readers and our commenters and the people who discuss things. And so there are a number of blogs, and they come from different perspectives. We've got more conservative blogs, we've got more liberal blogs, we've got strongly feminist blogs, we've got more academic blogs, and it's sprung up in a sort of a loose-knit community. There are some interesting norms and values in the Bloggernacle. So early on, Times and Seasons, one of the initial blogs in the Bloggernacle, the blog which I must say coined the phrase Bloggernacle. I don't know whether we should be giving credit for that or whether that should be viewed as a negative, but in any case, we had a contest to see what the group should be called, and one of our readers, Grasshopper, came up with the term. But early on, we said, is that Grasshopper? There we go. So coiner of the phrase. Yes, he's been hiding because everybody's upset at him about the neologism. But,
is GST here?
Is GST here?
Oh, it's just a
fatal. Oh, no. Apparently not, which is probably good because otherwise we'd all be skewered. But it raises some fun questions. We've got these comment policies at Times and Seasons. You can't question another person's righteousness. At the same time, you can't directly attack the church. You can't say, you are stupid to be a Mormon, but you also can't say you are an apostate for saying, is it okay to be pro-choice? So we get these two major boundaries, so to speak. First off, you can't directly attack another person's righteousness, but second, you can't sort of directly attack church doctrines in a way that would make the church membership itself seem invalid. So those are sort of the guidelines we set up at Times and Seasons, and those guidelines have roughly been followed at a lot of other blogs. By Common Consent has a relatively similar approach, and other blogs varying in their sort of style, but have similar approaches. Does that exclude some portion of Mormonism? And I think the answer is yes and no. So the Bloggernacle is, I would like to suggest, it's about two-thirds of an elephant. The old analogy is that the blind men feeling the elephant to try to feel which is what, and of course one feeling the trunk, one feeling the leg, coming down with different ideas. The Bloggernacle is the front two-thirds of the elephant. And some strands of Mormon thought and some strands of Mormon community really flourish in the blogs. And so we see lots of discussions by Mormon women, which is a great, great way that blogs are able to sort of present the view of Mormon women. We see great sort of Sunday school expanded discussions of Greek and, Kevin Barney posting about this is a fun way to look at the Greek or Hebrew term. Interesting posts along those lines. Those kinds of discussions flourish. We see testimonies, we see stories, and we see questions. And all of those really flourish. And frankly, some lesser known elements of LDS culture flourish. And so we see feminism and gay Mormons flourishing as well in the Bloggernacle, people discussing questions they have about same-sex attraction or questions they have about feminism in a much more open way than they might do in a Sunday school environment. Some strands don't flourish. Authoritarian strands of Mormonism really have not done well in the Bloggernacle, in part because we've said at Times and Seasons and by Common Consent and at other blogs, you can't call into question other people's righteousness. That really is, unfortunately, part of Mormon experience, is telling other people that they're bad people. And we try to limit that in the Bloggernacle, not always successfully. But because of that, it is only two-thirds of the elephant. Maybe the back end of the elephant isn't being represented entirely. And this is a conscious decision. I mean, we realize that there are parts of Mormon culture that are going to be excluded, and I think this is a decision that has been consciously made, not necessarily on the we would like to keep out those bad people, but rather we're trying to import the ideas and the things about LDS culture and LDS discussion that we enjoy the most in this community. And also the Blagernacle has no official or priesthood connection, so we don't have the hierarchical connection. We don't have a stake president of the Blagernacle. We don't have any sorts of official hierarchy, which again makes it different from Mormonism. So we can see a lot of the same strands, but we are only getting about two-thirds of the elephant. This is interesting because so much of Mormonism is based on tensions. Terrell Givens writes about the tensions in Mormonism. And if we're only getting two-thirds of the elephant, we're not necessarily seeing the tensions between the trunk and the tail, so to speak. And so as a result, it would be impossible, I think it would be quite possible, for someone to get a somewhat inaccurate picture, not because the blogs intend to portray it that way, but because so much of Mormonism is about conflicting values in tension with each other, authoritarianism versus free will, and on the blogs we only see the free will side of that. Not that that's not what Mormonism is about, but it misses part of the tension that defines what much of the Mormon experience is. So as a result, where does this leave us? It leaves me just about out of time, so I'd better do things quickly. I think that in the hands of an experienced journalist or somebody who knows the background, two-thirds of the elephant can be fine. I think that when Peggy talks to a blogger about some particular issue, she knows there's this ongoing tension. She knows where the elephant's trunk is, where the elephant's legs are, and she knows that she's not necessarily getting the full picture of the tension based on the bi-common consent thread or the times and seasons thread, and that's okay because she knows how to frame it. It worries me. As much as I like to see publicity, it worries me to see John DeLynn quoted in the New York Times, because I don't know that a New York Times reporter who's not as well versed with the tensions and the background is going to realize what's actually going on and may come away with an inaccurate picture. It worries me to see Lisa on Rita Radio, because I had the sense that they really didn't know these tensions, they really didn't know the background of Mormonism. And as a result, not through any fault of Lisa's, but because the Blagernacle only represents a portion or a particular slice, that they came away with a somewhat inaccurate picture of what Mormonism is. So I think hopefully what we can do as bloggers is continue to put forward the best face we can, but also note when people look to us as the face of Mormonism, the limitations. We really are just two-thirds of the elephant. And many times that's good enough, particularly in the hands of someone who already knows what the elephant looks like in general, who already knows the tensions. And if not, we should be aware and make other people aware that they are just getting two-thirds of the elephant. Thanks.
Using my computer because I'm most comfortable that way. I thought on seeing the questions posed in the framing of this session that people were likely to talk more about the ways that the Blagernacle is not like the church, not representative. And so I wanted to talk about some of the ways that it is very, very Mormon. I also wanted those of you who are not yet participants, have not yet been assimilated, to get some idea of what it's like to hang out in the Blagernacle. So I'm going to read several posts or excerpts from them. The Blagernacle is very Mormon in many ways. Bloggers are upbraided for the rare instances of profanity. People use the word upbraid. In the Blagernacle, as in church, nothing more predictably incites controversy than the utterance of the words women and priesthood anywhere in the same paragraph. We engage in endless discussion of the minutiae of Word of Wisdom compliance. After gay marriage and gender roles, the most commented posts are about chicken marsala and coffee ice cream. We are also weirdly invested in church music. A thread on If You Could Hide a Kolob still gets occasional comments several years after it was first posted. And a mention of the hymns one loves or hates is bound to derail any discussion of anything else and lead to lengthy commenting on hymns, which I love. We are also silly with music sometimes. There was a thread a few months ago on a blog called Zelophehad's Daughters, which is run by seven sisters and their brother. And this evolved, this song. The blogger posted the first verse, and then commenters contributed subsequent ones. And if you'll forgive me for being someone who really should only sing in choirs, I will sing it for you. Deification, premortal existence, grace necessary, but so is persistence. God is embodied, we'll get ours back too. These Mormon doctrines are my favorite few. Eve, not the fall guy, and Heavenly Mother, postmortem missions, Jesus, my brother. God's not omniscient, theodicy. These are some ideas I like to see. When the stones peep polyandry, when I'm feeling shammed, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so damned. Great! There's another verse in which there was actually a little theological controversy, even in this, about God's omniscience. And the next verse went, free agency is what matters the mostest. We are all saved through Jesus, almostest. I want to hang with dead people like me. God is as omni can be. So that's why I stay in the Bloggernacle. We also have a high priest group that meets regularly for completely unhinged doctrinal speculation. Their blog is inexplicably called New Cool Saying, and they have discussions under headings like counterdeterminism, what if, the advantages of bad theology. Actually, free will probably is free. On the personhood of Satan. That was a really long one. That was hundreds and hundreds of comments. And my favorite, give me libertarian free will or give me oblivion. However, I think the thing that makes the Bloggernacle most similar and perhaps representative of Mormonism is that in the middle of arguing about trivia, the fierce exchange of opinions, the passing of judgment, and the fun socializing, occasionally grace breaks out. Against all odds, puny humans manage to connect with each other, with God, and with everything that matters. And so I want to just share three occasions that were memorable to me when this happened. One was a post in the early spring of 2005, and a blogger wrote, "It's just past midnight. I just came home for a few minutes from the ICU to write this post because I believe it could make a difference. We found our sweet..." I actually read all of these many times to try to get through them without crying. I won't, so just warning. "We found our sweet three-year-old son, Quinn, face down in the pool this afternoon. He is alive and stable now, but there remains a very real risk of brain damage. You Bloggernacle citizens are righteous people." Some would dispute that, but not right now. "I can tell. We are praying for a full recovery for Quinn. Can you please help? Prayer is a form of work, but my family can't do all this work alone. We need saviors on Mount Zion to help us with this work. All we ask is one sincere prayer for our boy to have a full recovery. If you can muster more, we would be very grateful. Our extended family and our ward family are already joining in the prayers. I came home tonight to beg for your prayers on behalf of Quinn as well. I got the feeling that it would be worth it." And then 2 days later, "Update, thank you all. We got our miracle. All is well. And we'll make the air with music ring because of it. I'm only home for a few minutes, so I haven't had time to check the Bloggernacle or the comments here. But I assume that my plea for prayers here made a difference. Here's the update. Our baby boy Quinn is well on his way to a full recovery." And then he tells a little bit more about the story and says, "Miracles happen. I'm glad I am a Mormon boy." Another time that I think grace broke out was quite recently on a thread about the church's recent pamphlet on homosexuality. It was a long thread that got heated, as most discussions of that topic do among Mormons. But there's a wonderful gay man who lives in California who has been posting and participating for a couple of years in the Bloggernacle, and we all sort of know him and and like him a lot. He's funny and good-willed towards Mormons, despite the many reasons that could make someone not be. And someone asked him why he would want to go to a Mormon church. He mentioned that he wished he could come and sit in sacrament meeting and feel welcomed. And someone asked him why he would when there are other churches that would be more accommodating. And here's what he said. There are other churches that are fully accepting, and I have attended the Episcopal Church from time to time. My heart is just not in that. I read the Book of Mormon almost every day. When I pray, it's in a way that would be very familiar to anyone here. There isn't much that I know for sure, but I do know that if there are such people as prophets, Joseph Smith was one of them. So it leaves me in a bit of a bind. Stumbling into the Bloggernacle a while back was a huge blessing to me. It has reactivated a side of my life that had been entirely marginalized for years. Remarkably, I find myself defending the church from time to time. No, they don't all hate us. Why don't you read it for yourself? So it's a bit of a dilemma, but it doesn't bother me at this point in my life. As for the afterlife, well, I have strong universalist leanings. Then finally, there's a lot of writing in the Bloggernacle about gender roles and women's issues, for want of better terminology, and a lot of rhetoric about motherhood and a lot of discussion about the church's rhetoric of motherhood, which has always been a point that is difficult for me, a point where I bump into the institutional church in painful ways. And a few years ago, one of the bloggers at Times and Seasons, Rosalind Welch, wrote this, which strikes me as an entirely Mormon approach to motherhood, and it was one that I could embrace and love and feel really spoke to my experience, and yet was also wholly Mormon. And so it's been significant to me personally, and so I want to end by reading Rosalind's description of motherhood. It's called The Sea All Water. Motherhood rose around me like a tide in the weeks after my daughter's birth. Each night advanced towards me, implacable as a wave, my panic and dread rising like froth up a beach until the moment of submersion, when wondrously I found I could float. Few things in life have come to me as arduously as motherhood came, and nothing else has revealed itself as suddenly. 2 weeks after my daughter's birth, I retreated to my parents' house, hoping that my mother would know how to make this infant eat, sleep, and stop crying. I was having a terribly difficult go of motherhood. I wasn't sleeping, couldn't eat, was losing weight precipitously, and felt with each pound that I was losing myself as well. My daughter was consuming me, literally, and I sincerely thought I might die. My mother's 11 infants had not, unfortunately, prepared her for mine, and she had no miraculous corrective for the eating, sleeping, or crying. One night, I was up late, walking and nursing the child. My mother was up late, too, helping my 13-year-old brother with a school project in the kitchen. Things weren't going well for anybody. Abraham had procrastinated this project despite my mother's persistent warnings, and 11 o'clock and then 11:30 brought swells of anxiety and frustration. Finally, the end was in sight, until a crucial piece of poster board came up missing. My mother would have to run out and get another one. And she stood up at the table, walked out the door, drove to Savon. And to me, this was a revelation. This occasion of mothering did not call forth from the deep the twin forces of instinct and nature. And since my depths plumbed had been found to contain nothing of the sort, this was an unspeakable relief to me. Nor was it about summoning or conveying motherly emotion. Again, as inexplicably absent from me as that poster board was from the kitchen. It was, simply and supremely, an act of will. My mother chose to rise from the table, chose not to lecture or recriminate, and probably chose what color poster board to buy, too. In that series of choices, those small assertions of the will, I realized she was mothering. To parent is to engage in a kind of self-sacrifice. My mother teaches early morning seminary, and a late-night trip to Savon is costly. Tides rise and fall with the moon, and as my daughter waxed, yes, I would wane. But the series of choices I had witnessed, that instant of mothering, was no study in martyrology stripped of romanticism. It bared the stuff of life and choice. This was not self-sacrifice as event, or worse, anecdote, but as method. This episode was, to me, all the finer for its banality. The stakes were very low that night. At worst, Abraham would turn in his project a day late, but my mother persisted. In the aggregate, the effect of a childhood's worth of mothering choices is high, perhaps immeasurably high, but the effect of each occasion, individually, as it gathers itself and breaks, is fairly incidental. This is a mother's daily grace, that in her failing she may not fail her child, but it is also her abiding test. Even when the stakes are low, precisely because the stakes are low, she moves by volition among the moments of the day. That was it. That was my revelation. The tide surged overhead. I gasped, then followed my mother out to sea. The Bloggernacle may not represent Mormonism, but it is deeply Mormon in many ways, and I actually believe that it does represent a working out of the loveliest things in Mormonism, of trying to articulate what spiritual experience is like, of trying to explain ourselves to each other, and ultimately to figure out how to speak the truth in love.
Yes. I'm both humbled and a little intimidated to be here. I used to be a regular participant at Sunstone, but it's been about 15 years since I've been here in the Sheraton Hotel. And it's been in the Sheraton Hotel a lot. I think it was in the Sheraton Hotel last time I participated. And it's great to see people that I've never met, but whom I know through the internet, as well as many old friends. And that's a real pleasure to me. And my brother Daniel made it. If anybody needs any real estate in Magna, he's got lots of stuff for you right there. Thank you, Daniel, for coming, because this isn't really his sort of thing. I'm also humbled and intimidated because I'm following Christine Hagelin, who I have long since decided is the single most caring and compassionate and giving writer and thinker that I have ever met through the Bloggernacle. I'm also, finally, I have to apologize because I'm a political theorist and a philosopher at heart, so what I have prepared is really going to be boring compared to what has come before. When I saw the question that Kaimi had prepared, I immediately started thinking about it like an academic, and I looked at it and I said, is there some sort of category mistake in the way this question is set up? I mean, what we're talking about here is a group of people talking in cyberspace. In what way could that possibly represent an actual way of life, a community, a faith that we belong to or at least have some sort of association with, some sort of sympathy for? Think about the kind of community that Mormonism is. It is elective. Obviously people join the church. People also leave the church. But it's also organic. People are born into the church. They are raised in the church. It has a physical and temporal infrastructure. There are church buildings that we go to and that some of us have to clean on Saturdays. There are conferences twice a year that we watch, and that's leaving aside ward conferences and state conferences. The Mormon community is a daily community. It is a face-to-face community. You interact with people on a very personal and intimate way. It is an authoritarian community. It is a community where there are norms that are enforced, sometimes just in principle, but also sometimes when necessary in practice. It is a community that possesses a fairly clear sense of its own boundaries. It is a community that membership in will bring... I got my grammar wrong there. Membership in the Mormon community will bring with it many real-world markers, like the garments I'm wearing right now, alcohol that I will not drink at a faculty party. And because of those real-world markers, it often carries with it real-world repercussions. It is a comprehensive community. It has something for you when you are a baby. It has something for you when you are eight. It has something for you when you are married. It has something for you when you have children. It has something for you when you die. What kind of community is the Bloggernacle? The Bloggernacle is a wholly elective community. Despite advances in biotechnology, I am not aware of anybody who is born with a DSL uplink in their mind. You don't have to be a member of the Bloggernacle. It is entirely upon your own choice. It is present only in cyberspace. It has no physical infrastructure. There are the occasional social gatherings, but that's about it. And there's no temporality to it whatsoever. There are things that will come along fairly regularly in this internet community, but it is not locked into the seasons as our physical Mormon community is. It is only an occasional community. I can go a week without logging on. I can go 2 weeks without logging on. I can go a month without logging on. And it's and I have. And people do. People start lurking after having, you know, been a central member of the community, and then maybe they'll come back later on, or maybe they won't. It is almost never a face-to-face community. There are authoritarian elements to the Bloggernacle, but they only exist in fairly particular circumstances. Generally speaking, at least so long as blogging software is free, there are no barriers to entry, and it is eminently democratic. There are boundaries, and Kaimi has mentioned some of them, but these boundaries are open to far more contestation than you would ever find in a regular ward. And frankly, they're fairly loosely enforced. As for real-world repercussions, the fact of the matter is except for folks like yourselves that are already readers, the only way I could be marked by my membership in the Bloggernacle is if I publicly acknowledge it. And then most people would just look at me and say, what's that? Bloggernacle, okay. Only through explicit self-definition does it have any effect. And frankly, it's a limited community. It is not comprehensive. Speaking in terms of age, my kids don't blog on the Bloggernacle because, frankly, I wouldn't let them. And my mom does read it occasionally, but it definitely has a fairly limited scope. So considering these two different types of communities and the way in which they really don't overlap all that much when you look at the whole breadth of Mormon experience, I was wondering, really, how can you even talk about this internet activity representing Mormonism? The Bloggernacle cannot in any way represent endowment sessions, home teaching visits, Boy Scout backpacking trips, casserole deliveries, the partaking of the sacraments, sweating while wearing your garments on a hot day, chaperoning youth dances, proselyting on street corners, contacting less active members, or 1,000 other things. But are there some things it can represent? Yes. It can represent and reflect the intellectual, the conversational, and the devotional aspects of Mormonism. Kaimi developed this way of talking about the Bloggernacle as if, okay, we got an elephant and we're reflecting 2/3 of it. That can work, I suppose, but I'm not sure I would go fully along with it. Instead, maybe you need to be thinking about things in terms of a theory and praxis. There are aspects of the of Mormon life that do come down to conversation, bull sessions that break out during ward council, discussions in the foyer in between meetings, yakking with other youth leaders while you're on a long bus trip to the Hill Cumorah. And then, of course, there are the private devotional moments, reading the scriptures, reading the ends, and listening to a sacrament meeting talk or a testimony meeting, or perhaps just meditating on your own on temple grounds. So yes, there are elements of Mormon life that the Bloggernacle can reflect, can represent, but there's an awful lot that it cannot. The question then comes to me is whether or not that odd attempt to make the Bloggernacle representative is barking up the wrong tree, whether it's pursuing the wrong goal, whether it misunderstands what its own activity is. I do a lot with communitarian thinking, studying philosophers that are interested in areas of community. It comes into a lot of my writing. And so I drew upon some of that in trying to work through some of these ideas. Some years ago, a fellow by the name of Cass Sunstein wrote a book called Republic.com. Some of you may have heard of it. It was an attack on the way in which the internet and many other modern media technologies allows for a great deal of personalization and filtering of the news that you learn. If you're only interested in conservative news, then you just set your internet to take you to conservative websites. You only watch conservative talk shows on cable television and so forth. You can do the same sort of thing from practically any perspective. He's not a real communitarian thinker, but he was deeply concerned about the effects of this because he thought that by avoiding a wide range of activities and ideas, people will become poorer citizens and therefore less able to participate in self-government. Deliberation becomes difficult when all you know is the stuff that you already agree with. Now, arguably, something of the same could be said about the Bloggernacles. If somebody looks to the Bloggernacle, which is overwhelmingly the creation of white, middle, and upper class, relatively well-educated, politically moderate, talkative, and at least quasi-intellectual Mormons. If you look at the Bloggernacle as a source of insight into or information about Mormonism, you're going to be viewing Mormonism through a massive conceptual filter. Now, that doesn't mean what you see on the Bloggernacle is wrong, because, of course, there really are argumentative debates that break out in church foyers. Those things really do happen, and they are a part of our life experience as members of the church. But to take that as a mirror in any sense would be to expect a level of discussion and debate, an openness to boundaries and participation, an attitude towards authority and so forth that is totally unrepresentative of actual Mormon life. Now, having said that, I want to back away from it and think about something else. Maybe Sunstein's approach, his concern about ranges of views and ranges of activities, is the wrong way to analyze these different types of communities. I mean, after all, Sunstein is talking about making a functioning democracy. He's talking about a political project. And while being Mormon is in many ways unavoidably political, it is in no serious sense a democratic project. So perhaps hanging one's assessment of what the Bloggernacle is on, you know, an analysis of whether or not it gets Mormon practices right is entirely the wrong way to go forward. There's other ways of thinking about communities. Many people write about what they refer to as intentional communities. By this I mean communities that come together made up of people that have removed themselves at least in part from other projects and associations because they want to pursue something in common. That thing that they pursue is many times abstract, intellectual, conversational, something that they grasp as an idea and that draws them away from already thoroughly embedded forms of life so that they can add a little something to what they have. Now, on a certain level, people like Sunstein can and, in fact, actually do attack Mormonism itself as a kind of intentional community. I mean, look at us. We're a bunch of crazy authoritarian folk that have hived themselves off from the mainstream, live in accordance to all sorts of strange rules, departing from the ordinary life of the nation in order to pursue our own particular vision. And this makes us threatening in one way or another. One might accept that analysis as having a certain point to it. But if one doesn't, if instead one wants to believe that the intentionality of Mormonism mixes well with the larger realities of where one lives and what one has to do for a living, if you believe that you can have this theoretical model, this intellectual model, this abstract model of how you want to live, the things that interest you, the things that bind you to other people, and you can carry that on with the rest of your ordinary life, then Mormonism isn't threatening at all. Certainly Mitt Romney wants voters of America to think that. And you could apply the same sort of thing to the Bloggernacle. What we have is, in the Bloggernacle, is a bunch of abstract intentional communities in which a bunch of, you know, computer literate, relatively talkative and intellectually engaged Mormons who happen to be fascinated by one subject or another, or who want more opportunities for meditation or devotion, or who want more insight into scripture studies, or who want to talk politics, or who want to do any number of different things, get together and seek more doctrinal or cultural or just gossipy interaction than they can get in their own foyers. In this way, you look at the Bloggernacle, and you can ask about its representativeness. You can say, well, insofar as the Bloggernacle is an extension of the foyer that we all enjoy in between sacrament meeting and Sunday school. What's going on in that foyer? Who's in that foyer? What can we do to bring more people into that foyer? And what can we do as those people in the foyer to be more tolerant of the folks who really are doing fine not participating in all of that? As far as the question of the representativeness of the Bloggernacle goes, the question of who's being left out, I would have to respond to that by asking what you understand the Bloggernacle to be. If you think the collection of Mormon blogs in some way has an obligation to capture the breadth of Mormon experience, and to the extent it's leaving anybody out, it's doing its job poorly, then I think you're misunderstanding what it's all about. It's just the internet, folks. I mean, honestly. But if you say, okay, within the broad sweep of Mormonism, you can have certain intentionally shared goals, a desire for a little more of this or a little more of that, that doesn't compromise or interfere with anything else that you're doing or living, but simply adds to it, then you can say, well, are you getting added to your life what you need in order to be a good father, a good husband, a good child, a good friend, a good Sunday school teacher, or just a happier person? Then maybe you could ask the question of representativeness. So next time Camp Kaimi puts together one of these things, I'd just ask him to polish up the question a little bit more before he invites people. But other than that, thanks.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, my name is Lisa Butterworth, and I feel really dumb coming after all these really smart people. I founded Feminist Mormon Housewives not in an attempt to, change the world or Mormonism or anything, but just in an attempt to talk out all the brain vomit in my head that I had no place to spew it into. And so, I just needed a receptacle for my brain vomit. And the internet is really good for those sorts of things. So I founded it. Sorry. What they said was just so smart. I don't know what to... I have to speak personally from my own point of view because I'm not a philosopher or a lawyer or, I don't have PhDs in anything. So I just have to say, does the Bloggernacle represent Mormonism to me in my personal life and personally? Because that's how I approach everything. And if you ever read my blog, you'll probably realize that I approach everything with... from, how I view it, and I don't have any deep philosophical ideas about much of anything. So I will just tell you what I think, and there you go. I was in, not too long ago, for my Temple Recommend interview. And my stake president has been my stake president for quite a long time, and before that he was my bishop. And I don't know him terribly well, but he does know that, he knows me well enough to know that I struggle with certain issues. And so, we sat down and he started asking me, well, how are you doing on these things and how are you feeling about this and that? And when I sit down and have these conversations with very good men like my stake president is and like my bishop is, I realize that they have only the faintest clue about what's going on in my head. And I don't think they really even want to know. And it's the same way I feel when I'm home with my mother, which we just had a huge fight this morning. And the same thing happened when I was going to the last Sunstone Symposium. So I talk about my mother at Sunstone because I'm always having a fight with my mother when I come to Sunstone. As a Mormon and as a person who used to be a very, conservative, Orthodox, straight-laced Mormon for the first 18 years of my life, I do understand that mindset, and I don't know why I variegated from that mindset. I don't know what happened to my brain that made me go all wonky and end up at Sunstone. But something happened in there, and it didn't work out properly, according to my mother, and now I'm this freaky Sunstone person who has a blog, who I haven't told my mother about yet. But I think I'm going to tell her because, dang it, the fight this morning, she can just take it all. She can just know about feminist Mormon housewives and get it over with, right? So anyway, when I look at the kinds of things we talk about, like naughty nipples, it does not represent anything like what my mother sees Mormonism as. But on the other hand, my mother really taught me to love Mormonism. She's a wonderful woman, and she is, I mean, like, if you take the perfect Mormon mother and add a little bit of tactless, you know, whatever she is, tactless anger, add that to the perfect Mormon mother, you've got my mom. And so she really did teach me to love Mormonism, and she helped build in me this testimony I have of the gospel. And so, you know, so on the one hand, she wouldn't recognize the way I have resolved Mormonism. But on the other hand, I needed a way to resolve it. So I don't know, when we say, does the Bloggernacle accurately represent Mormonism, I think my mother's going to freak out when she reads my blog. And your blog. She is not going to recognize the Mormonism that she reads there at all, I don't think. But on the other hand, I needed a way that I could take the Mormonism that I love and that I need and that completes my soul and work it into this wonky, defunct brain that I have. So for me, it absolutely represents Mormonism because it's essential. I don't think I would have been able to figure it out. I think there are other people, probably the founders of Sunstone and all of you who've been going for years and years, you've figured out on your own, or you haven't, how to work Mormonism into your personal philosophies somehow. And it was absolutely essential to me, personally. And there are times when Kayumi talked about that we're only, you know, two-thirds of the elephant or whatever, and then I don't know what Russell said about it because it was too confusing. But there are times that I worry that I am misrepresenting Mormonism. For instance, when the Radio Ritas asked me about Mormonism, I don't know if you've ever heard that interview, but if you did, it sounded a little bit like they were talking to... which, you know, I'm not super intellectual. I don't know, you know, I wanted him to be really nice and gentle with me, so I appreciated the gentleness. But on the other hand, you know, it did sound a little bit condescending. It sounded like they were talking to some backwoods, backwater, polygamous fundamentalist who didn't know George Bush was president, or whatever. I mean, so there's that fear that, you know, they come and talk to me and say, oh, you're so sweet, you know, you're a little feminist trying to make Mormonism work, and, you know, and so, you know, there is that risk that I feel responsible for perhaps misrepresenting what Mormonism looks like to someone who might stumble upon my website, that either they'll think, oh, those cute little feminists, or on the other hand, my mother coming and saying, that's not Mormonism, what are those people talking about? Or a friend of mine the other day who I was talking about who was born and raised in Idaho, so she's been around Mormons a lot, but she's never been particularly interested in Mormonism. And she asked me, well, so what have you been doing? And I told her a little bit about my blog, and she read it a bit, and she's like, dang, that's really Mormon. You know, so she just wasn't that interested in the blog itself because she's not that interested in Mormonism. But to her, it seemed very Mormon because we're constantly talking about Mormon things and Mormon dialect. And when I think about that and I think, you know, that's not very representative of what she would see if she went into a church or had the missionaries over or, you know, talked to more mainstream Mormons. So I do worry that, but I don't know how to fix that. All I know how to do is to take care of the needs that I had when I started the blog. And I continue to get emails quite frequently from people who say, oh, thank you so much. I had all these questions in my head and I didn't even know where to begin. You know, everything from, liberal women who are thinking about converting to Mormonism to women who have just left Mormonism, who just needed a place to talk about all of their issues. So the next question is, are there demographic or ideological biases in the Blog and Echo? And duh. I mean,
that's what Russell said.
Okay, so Russell said it, but made it sound really smart. Are there people that are excluded? And again, Russell probably covered that better. It's hard to exclude people when it's this wide open, you know. It's much easier within Mormonism itself to feel excluded and to be excluded because of the way it's, you know, set up. And that's both good and bad, depending on how you're looking at it. I often feel excluded from, you know, the brick-and-mortar Mormonism because I really often don't feel like I can truly say what I'm thinking, which I bring that on myself. I'm a scaredy cat. In some circumstances, because I don't, I have this huge fear of being viewed as unrighteous. I guess also a gift from my mother. So I feel comfortable talking here because, you know, a certain kind of people show up at Sunstone. So I have very little fear that you're going to all think I'm unrighteous. But and I feel the same way on Feminist Mormon Housewives. I figure if they get past the title, then chances are, you know, they deserve what they get. But when you're sitting in Relief Society, you know, I really do feel excluded often because I don't know how to express myself in a way that wouldn't scare everyone and make them want to put me in a cupboard and lock the door. And I really don't think that everybody is as judgmental as I make them out to be. It's more my fear, I often think, than their fault. But in the Blognackle, I think probably the people that get excluded the most are probably the more conservative and orthodox. And often the reason we give for this when we, you know, berate them for their presence is that we get this every week at church, you know. So, sorry, I dropped my thing that had my time on it, so I didn't want to talk too long. When people show up with a certain authoritarian kind of bent, often, you know, we kind of nudge them out because we're like, we hear that every day. Thanks. I can call my mom and get that opinion. So, I think probably, for the most part, it's the conservatives who get pushed out of the Blockernackle. And I guess in my way of justifying that is if they want their own corner, well, they're welcome to go create one. And they can all sit over there and blog all they want. And I won't have to visit, just as Russell was talking about, because we've self-selected our communities, and I fear that too. And I know that it's something that people talk about with the feminist blogs being kind of separate from the other blogs, and you know, we talk about certain issues over here and, you know, other really smart things over there and maybe, you know, kind of wonky things over there. And we kind of separate out. And some people only ever visit one little spot. And I guess that doesn't concern me so much because I figure people are looking for a certain, to fulfill a certain need or to find out a certain answers to certain questions, or to find a certain community and a place that maybe is comfortable for them. And maybe that isn't the best thing for them intellectually or spiritually, but sometimes just finding a place where you belong is essential. I know it has been for my peace of mind, and there you go. Can the Blockernacle really represent mainstream Mormonism while also providing an accurate window into the many different demographic and ideological subgroups within the Mormon community? I don't know that that's what the Blockernacle is for, I guess. That's probably what Russell said, only smarter. Am I right? I don't know. I mean, I think it does represent, or not, it is a place of gathering and discussing for a pretty small subset of people within Mormonism. And I just happen to be one of those freaks. Does that make it... And I think that there can be, you know, again, the question of, do the people who aren't Mormon who show up, because I've gotten quite a few emails lately from people who are like, you know, I found your blog through Bust Magazine, and I'm not Mormon, and I'm probably never going to be Mormon, but I just think what you guys are doing is great, and, you know, I never knew that Mormons thought like this or had these opinions, and you know, I worry, because really Mormons don't think like that or have those opinions. You know, so perhaps it will open up their minds about what Mormons are, but on the other hand, it also does run the risk of totally misrepresenting what Mormons are. And maybe I should be more worried about that, but... Jeez, I'm just not as smart as these people. I don't know how to fix anything. So, basically, I don't think... In conclusion, I don't think that the Blockernacle represents Mormonism. And there's a lot of ways that you could define Mormonism and a lot of ways you could define represents. But pretty much any way you look at it, while it is a very Mormon place, like Christine says, and anybody who stumbles across it is going to, you know, find the word upbraided and you know, get a lot of weird talk about polygamy and those kinds of things. It's still essential, I think, for certain subsets of Mormons who either need to come to terms with the way they are embracing or have decided not to embrace Mormonism, or to find a community of people like I have found. You know, there are people in this room that are now some of my best friends, and I owe that to the Blockernacle, and I owe the new peace that I have with Mormonism to the Blockernacle, because I don't think I could have ever found this peace on my own, trying to work these things out without other people who were really smart. Like, the people sitting here at this table, every single one of them have written things that have resonated with me, that have brought me into a place where I can think about my religion differently than my mother and still embrace it. And so, I guess in that way, the Blockernacle represents Mormonism to me, because it taught me how, in a way that I just wasn't smart enough or strong enough or to do on my own. These people and you people have all taught me how to resolve those issues. So anyway, I apologize for not being as boring as these guys. But, you know, just personally, that's how the Blockernacle represents Mormonism to myself personally and in my experience and with no philosophy at all.
Okay, we purposely left some time to get some questions and comments from the audience. I'll start with the first question, and I open this up to the panel. Anybody can answer, and also anybody in the audience as well, if they want to answer this question, because there are a lot of BloggerNACL participants I see out there. In true BloggerNACL fashion, they've been blogging about this post before it even happened. They tend to scoop everything. Dave's Mormon Inquiry has a blog going on this. There's one commenter, C. Jones, who says, talking about Mormons, whether this represents Mormonism, and especially the more visible and notable bloggers. He says, I can sympathize with your Charles Barkley, I am not a role model stance. I think that that's unrealistic. BloggerNACL participants are already being sought out and quoted in national press. Those of you that have been around the longest have the most credibility, and like it or not, you will be the go-to Mormons in the public eye. So this panel on representing Mormonism, in the early 90s, the Brethren made some statements on symposia and alternate voices, and it had to do with the way that they purported to represent Mormonism, which is what we're talking about today. These statements were interpreted by many as a reference to Sunstone and other independent voices. I wonder if these statements also apply to the BloggerNACL. Because it's my impression that the things that are being discussed on a daily basis in the BloggerNACL are no different than what we're talking about here at the symposium and in the magazine. In fact, the reach and penetration of the BloggerNACL, Lisa, how many unique visitors do you have per month? Yeah.
We're averaging about 3,000 a day.
Okay. Anybody know? I thought it was like 40 or 50,000 per month or something like that.
Probably
40 and 60 per month. And I mean, that kind of penetration compared to Sunstone, we've got maybe less than 1,000 here and a readership of, maybe 2,500 is so much more profound. So you've got, Lisa's voice and Russell's voice reaching more people than some of the voices that people were concerned about with Sunstone ever did. So I'm curious if the BloggerNACL falls under that same umbrella and if there's any differences there.
I think we can take advantage of this cord. Yes. So, I'd like to bear testimony of Russell. And it's a great question because we get this all the time. And people say, "When is the crackdown going to happen?" And this question has been happening for the last 4 years because we started Times and Seasons in 2003, and almost immediately someone said, "When are the Brethren going to crack down and haul you off to prison, so to speak?" And so far, there has been very little negative reaction. A few individual bloggers on the sort of the Mormon post-Mormon boundary, somewhere along that boundary, have gotten contact from ecclesiastical leaders about things that they've written. I know John Remy has written on his blog about how his leaders have been upset with things that he's written. On the other hand, he's also written about the fact that he doesn't consider himself Mormon anymore. And so I don't think that the same sort of reaction necessarily will happen to Times and Seasons, By Common Consent, Feminist Mormon Housewives. There is this occasional discussion about whether it might, and what happens if it does. Are we an alternate forum, an alternate voice? Sometimes, yeah. Do we have apostles or people in the church office building noting that the blogs exist? I hear unconfirmed rumors and backstory rumors that general authorities know that the blogs exist and sort of keep track of them, at least on an occasional level. And we actually got linked by LDS.org a few weeks ago. So, and sort of in a way to disagree with something that Julie Smith had written, but it's also interesting. So this shows, there is a knowledge on the church's part that blogs exist, and apparently they haven't chosen, at least as of yet, to make a sort of to try to tell us that we can't blog, or at least not that I'm aware of, with, again, the exception of a couple of sort of individual bloggers who are a little bit more edgy and post-Mormon leaning than most of the what would be generally considered the BloggerNACL. Does that make sense? Does anybody else want to talk about this? All right.
Any other questions or comments from the audience? Introduce. Yeah, whoever stands up, if you're a Blogger NACL participant, please, you know, plug your website.
I'm not going to pass up a chance to talk. I'm Anne. I blog on the Cultural Hall and comment everywhere. And just as my name, Anne, and I just wanted to say that I was well on my way out, and so I mean well on my way out. Wrote a resignation letter after Russell Nelson came out with the proposal in favor of same-sex marriage, and the Blogger NACL brought me back. So And I've written about this before, but I just wanted to say that, like Lisa, every single one of you sitting at this table have written things that have touched me and made my life better. And, you know, the chance to, you know, the GA quotes and the admonitions from my local leaders to just, you know, pray, pay, and obey, they didn't work for me, but reading the thoughtful, insightful ideas by people who were, you know, in some sense way, like Lisa says, way smarter than me, but in the other sense, my peers, just folks out there with ideas to share, really changed things for me. I've written about this before. Russell Nelson came out with this statement in favor of a Defense of Marriage Act amendment, and within 2 days, Kevin Barney had a post on Buy Common Consent why he supports same-sex marriage, and David Fletcher, a gay man, posted why he's both gay and a Mormon, and how those two things are a part of his identity, and he's staying. And I thought, well, you know, if David Fletcher can stay, I can stay too. So, the Blogger NACL has made a huge difference in my life, and I'm a nerd. I'm an internet geek. I really ought to clean my house, just like Christine. But I really think it was time well spent.
Hi, I'm Carrie, and I am. I haven't really participated in the blogs, but I've read things that people. I let other people sort of sift through it and then send me the really great stuff. So I have a comment and a question. And in terms of it being representative, I think one thing that I didn't hear that seems important to me is that what everyone seems to consider the opposite of the Blogger NACL, which I'm guessing is sort of go to church and the temple and all of those things that we would consider to be kind of basic functions of the church, I don't think anyone here would say that that's representative of Mormonism either. So I think that there's something to be said for the fact that you have to have all of these sides for it to be representative. And certainly in the history of the church, I mean, people who are more renegade and liberal have been the backbone of the church, especially in the early days. Everyone was out there, right? that was how the church came about. And so I think if it doesn't represent the letter of Mormonism, it certainly represents the spirit, and it's all part of it. But the question that I have for all of you who do blog, I'm interested in the public nature of it because I don't do it, and I don't do it out of principle. I don't do it because for whatever reason it doesn't interest me. But I am interested in why it's valuable, why it's important to put these things in the public sphere, and not dialogue type of things, not where you have a question and you want to hear what other people have to say, but where you just have a thought or a statement or a story or maybe even a testimony. Why is it important to you to put that in the public sphere, and what is the value of it? And I'd be interested in hearing that from anyone, from any of you or anyone out here.
I probably don't represent even this panel in answering that, but I'll tell you why I do it. I actually didn't understand and didn't care about the public nature of blogging when I first found it. I sort of somehow, well, at first I thought, and then I sort of persisted in the delusion that this was a private or semi-private conversation between like-minded friends who happened to have found each other on this. And so for the first couple of months that I was blogging, I just pretty much thought I was talking to Kaimi and Russell and Nate and Steve Evans and a few other people. And then I got an email from my grandmother's home teacher. Who had been reading the blog and saw the name Haglund and wondered if I might be related. Well, yes, indeed. And so I started to feel a little more cautious at that point, but not enough to stop or even to do a great deal of self-censoring. I think that's just because I'm like that. I'm pretty WYSIWYG by nature. And I think the reason to publish it instead of just writing in my journal is that, and I think this may not be terribly uncommon among bloggers, and that is that on the Myers-Briggs test, I come out exactly split between extrovert and introvert. So I crave conversation and human interaction and find it extremely taxing at the same time. And so blogging is a great way because I don't actually have to look at anyone and talk to them. But I can have really meaningful and intimate conversations that are hard. It's hard for me somehow in real life to create occasions for those kinds of conversations. And so blogging gives me a way to sort of, you know, put out trial balloons and see if anyone responds and wants to talk to me.
If I can just follow up and also to talk a little bit about Anne's comment. But, I mean, Mormon blogs are incredibly participatory by nature. So you look at political blogs, you look at, you know, Instapundit, incredibly popular political blog, no comments at all. You just listen to what Glenn has to say. Versus Mormon blogs, at Times and Seasons, we have something like 3,000 posts over the course of history and like 100,000 comments. I mean, the amount of comments per post is incredibly high compared to legal blogs, political blogs, and other things. So much about Mormon blogging is not just, this is my thoughts on the Word of Wisdom, but wow, what is going on with this, you know, Word of Wisdom? What's going on with NyQuil versus medicinal marijuana? Can you compare them? If you can take NyQuil for medicinal reasons, can you take marijuana for medicinal reasons? And bam, there's 40 comments on it. So much of Mormon blogging is participatory rather than just, these are my thoughts, let me discuss them. And I guess to touch on Anne's comment, one of the most interesting things in this participatory experiment of blogging has been hearing how it affects people in real life. And I get feedback on both ends. And it was one of the most jarring moments was when somebody said in a comment in Times and Seasons, I've learned information here about church history that has destroyed my testimony of the church, and I'm never going to be Mormon again. And several of us were like, wow, I was just taken aback. I mean, and we were discussing some, I don't recall what, but I believe it was Joseph Smith polygamy, but this particular person, for that person, it destroyed their testimony. But then people like Anne and other people who have commented and have said, reading on the blogs and realizing that there are other people like me has been what has kept me in the church or has brought me back to church. Sometimes I wonder. I mean, you wonder, are you saying potentially damaging things? I mean, if you're talking about touchy subjects like polyandry, if you're talking about touchy, you know, same-sex marriage, disagreeing with the church position, that could be potentially harmful. Christine actually has one of the best posts ever written on the Bloggernacle about why it's good to have these things and why people shouldn't have testimonies that are like hothouse flowers that are just ready to wilt as soon as they get a draft of air. And Kevin actually is presenting tomorrow on basically the same theme. And I think, but it's been an interesting experience seeing the blogs affect people in real life. This is not just me and Nate Oman and Russell talking to each other in a coffee shop. People are being affected both positively and negatively in the Bloggernacle. It's been sobering for me to realize that. And one thing that I hope is that the effect has been more positive than negative.
I just want to briefly correct something Kaimi said, and it actually has a point. The New York Times reporter actually came to my house in Logan and spent 2.5 hours with me. So it wasn't that she just grabbed my comment off a blog. But I have a point for that, actually. And that's I've had the distinct pleasure of traveling to New York and Boston and Seattle and other places and meeting many of the members of the Blogger Knuckle. And being in Christine's home and eating her, was it peach cobbler? What was it that you served? Or your spring squash lasagna with Elizabeth Calvert-Smith and with Kynthia, you know, and DKL, David King Landreth. It's been some of the most rewarding, enriching experiences of my life. Now, what I'm trying to get to with both those comments is that even though the Blogger Knuckle is beautiful, the physical touch and the physical relationship is an extension and even, for me, a more amplified sense of beauty. And I mention this because Sunstone was an integral part of saving me, just like the Blogger Knuckle worked for Anne. And so when I came to the Blogger Knuckle, one of the things I wanted to do, I said, oh, these are my Sunstone buddies, because they're all talking about the same things. But then I started talking to Blogger Knuckle people, and they're like, oh, no, Sunstone's bad. Sunstone's evil. Oh, we can't. Oh, no, we can't affiliate with Sunstone. We can't quote Sunstone. They're bad people. You know, and that confused me so much. And so I am so grateful and honored that you guys would be here today, number one. For me, it's a selfish validation, but there's so many people who come physically who don't spend time on the web. So that validation is so important. But I also just want to extend an offer. We're going to try one of our strategies. We're going to talk about the strategy of Sunstone tonight, right before, during the Pillars of Our Faith session. And one of the things we want to do is have more regional symposiums. And so as we start trying to create those and having them in your necks of the wood, so to speak, I don't know if I got the grammar right on that. I would love for you guys to not be ashamed of this affiliation. And if we come to Boston or if we come to San Diego and try and hold an event, that you guys will pull your friends along or encourage them to be a part of this, because Sunstone maybe can fulfill the physical community need that will only make the Blogger Knuckle more special and more powerful and impactful, I believe. And so forgive me for that plug, but anyway, thank you so much for being here. Thank you. And
John, Karen, please, just kind of thinking a lot about...
No, come to the mic, please.
You know, John, I am aware, obviously, that sort of sentiment has long existed amongst a lot of bloggers. I think if you dig down into it, you come to what might actually be the deepest and probably the most permanent fissure in any attempt to put together an intentional community, a community based on ideas. And that is that you get a group of people together because they share a desire to add something intellectual, something abstract, something conversational, something fun and gossipy to their lives. And because it is not necessarily a lived thing, you will actually end up with radically different people sharing that same conversational space. And then when it actually comes to, you know, however lightly, however tentatively, shaping an identity, forming boundaries, making administrative decisions, when you're dealing with all these people who really can get along with each other fabulously well when it comes to just talking, when it comes to, you know, abstractly arguing, all of a sudden you hit some very, very rough ground. And obviously... to a great extent, this is a, you know, just to use the shorthand, it's a liberal conservative thing. But it's not only that. Wilfred Dicou is a regular blogger with Times and Seasons, fantastic writer, brilliant human being, and frankly, probably to the left of just about everybody in this room. But he has been deeply shaped by the missionary experiences of the church in Europe, the public reputation of the church, and while in no way a conservative, he is really very, very suspicious of anything that can in any way somehow hypothetically rebound as to, you know, make Mormons look like they're arguing amongst themselves, make them look like, you know, they're involved in, you know, in, you know, cheap internal arguments, if, to make them look like they're anything other than, you know, a straight up a bunch of folks. And so, so you get these fissures, you get these deep divides, and they have caused greater headaches among some of us than anything else that we've encountered online over the last 4 years. I'd love to say that, you know, tomorrow we're going to stumble across, you know, some sort of theory of organizational behavior that will eliminate those fissures, but we're not. And there are people in this room that have been hurt and hurt bad by attempts, sometimes poor attempts, to negotiate around those fissures. And all I can say is that after 4 years, I just kind of think it's the nature of the beast. And I hope that what you're asking for can be reciprocated. But, I mean, you've got to know as well as anybody, you know, some of the obstacles that are in the way of that. So.
Hi, I've been blogging for about 6 months, but I've not been and made any attempt to connect with the Bloggernacle in any way. I'm Jane Ann Peterson. My blog is fuguesalad.blogspot.com, but largely because I mostly post about food. I very occasionally post about Mormon topics, but you know, I'd love to get 300 hits a day. I think my high is like 60, but I guess I'm only 6 months in. But I was interested to hear you say, Lisa, that you think that conservatives don't feel welcome at Feminist Mormon Housewives, because I started reading at the very beginning when you first started, and I dropped out after not very long because I felt like it was a little too friendly for conservatives. You're giving them a little too much opportunity to voice their opinions, and frankly, I'm with you. I hear enough of that at church, and I don't need to hear it anymore. But one of the ways in which the Bloggernacle is different from Mormonism for me is that conservatives are nicer in person.
My name is Glenn Cornett, and I don't blog. I have I'm part of a nice little discussion group. You guys are welcome to join that, and someday I'll blog if I ever get time. But I've enjoyed watching the Bloggernacle evolve. About in the year 2000, one of my favorite Mormons said to me that the internet will be to the Mormon Church what Gutenberg was to the Catholic Church, that it will unleash this torrent of civil discourse that will be shocking and offensive to some and useful, hopefully, to all of us. And I think that with that in mind, the Bloggernacle, arguably at the vanguard of that, you can argue, put pro or con, the Bloggernacle is certainly the most visible instantiation of that. I'd say the Bloggernacle is not that representative of the church. Your two-thirds bit, suggests that your quantitative skills were hammered nastily when you were doing billable hours accounting at Cravath. Okay. our profoundly unsophisticated feminist Mormon housewife has much better skills than you. Maybe you could tutor him a bit after class. But all that said, I would argue that the Bloggernacle represents where the church is going, at least for people with college degrees. It represents right now reasonably well at least a large growing minority, if not a majority, of sort of opinion, worldview, if you will, of people that still think about their religion, that have degrees, that are probably under 50. Okay, this sort of bandwidth of age, if you will. And I would argue that this is actually not representative of what the church is, but what it hopefully is becoming.
All right. Great. Thank you very much for all your comments. That's all the time we have today. We'll see you at the next session. Thanks.